His main agenda was to present his prepared dissent and refused to sign the commission report unless his dissent was included. After presenting his concern, he was joined in the dissent by Senator John Sherman Cooper and, to a lesser extent, Representative Hale Boggs. In an oral history conducted late in his life, Senator Cooper recalled that Russell's well-reasoned opinions had great influence on Cooper's own admissions. Like Russell, Cooper was impressed with the strong and compelling testimony of Governor Connally and thus was willing to follow Russell's lead in rejecting the single bullet theory and the Oswald alone conclusion.
You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are watching, listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm your host, Carrie Lutz. Well, you know, I think I was 6 years old when President John F. Kennedy was assassinated. I was in first grade. I remember we came back from lunch and heard the news. I didn't really know particularly what was going on or anything else, but I knew it was bad because everyone else was upset. And, you know, for my life and the course of many of you out there, it really set the tone for the United States. I felt like the United States was never the same after the assassination. And there's a whole host of characters involved. There's millions of books, notes, video, you know, you name it. It is the one of the events of the past century that has never been settled to anyone's liking other than the powers that be. Mark Shaw, you have basically devoted your life to uncovering the truth here. You know, when we first connected, I think about 4 years ago, you had found out about the death of Dorothy Kilgallen, who was a noted journalist and the only person, reporter, to interview Jack Ruby, and so much more. She was really a trailblazer for women's empowerment in the 50s, and I owe my name to her. And, you know, it's really good to have you back on here. I know you've not just been sitting around waiting for the retirement checks to come in.
No, I don't know if I could retire. Retirement's good for some people, but probably not for me. I got in touch with you because I want to get into, and we'll do it just as we go through what I'm talking about here, the new revelations about the Warren Commission and the corruption there. But so much of this was stirred by the fact that Dorothy Kilgallen, just to give people an idea, one of the most celebrated journalists in history in the 50s and 60s, she was best known at the time for being the star panelist on What's My Line, the CBS quiz show watched by 10 million people every Sunday night. But Dorothy was also a celebrated journalist, Pulitzer Prize nominated journalist, syndicated to 200 newspapers across the country. She had a radio show listened to by a million people a day. She covered the Dr. Sam Shepard case, which became the fugitive, the Lindbergh baby kidnapping case. She covered the Queen's coronation in England. She was a big deal. New York Post called her the most powerful female voice in America. Ernest Hemingway, she said she was one of the greatest woman writers of the time. So she was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And back in 1963, we have to figure out where she is because she's just, every day she's in the news and all of that. And then something happens, and that is, of course, the death of JFK. So Dorothy is at home, and she's with her youngest son, Cherry, of whom you are named.
Yep.
And you can explain how that worked in a minute.
Yeah.
But anyway, they're sitting there, and then they watch Jack Ruby shoot Lee Harvey Oswald. Well, that's enough for Ruby. She and JFK were very close friends. He had been to her home. They played charades. He'd been to some parties. She knew him from the restaurants and bars in New York City. And when Ruby shot Oswald, that really perked her ears up, like, hey, something's wrong. So,
but on the face, let me interject, Mark. On the face, it is completely absurd. Okay. In the middle of a police station, the Dallas police station, this guy gets in and shoots the, so I don't want to call him a suspect, but the alleged assassin of the president. He just gets in there. And, you know, if you know anything about intelligence agencies, it's called the tying up loose ends, right?
That's a good point. Exactly. It is. And in fact, the death of Dorothy Kilgallen, we'll talk about, was tying up a loose end. So what does she do? Well, she's with Carrie, her youngest son, and she's so upset. The first column she writes, I don't know if you remember that, I can quote it verbatim. She said, the man in the what I remember is a tall man stooping over a little boy, my son Carrie, who had brought third grade letters from his third grade class to a meeting that we had with JFK in the White House. And he made a big fuss over those particular letters. He gave Carrie a PT-109 pen, a pen. I mean, he just made a big fuss over there. And then she made this she ended it by saying, this is the man who was killed, assassinated in Dallas. So Dorothy then went ahead, and I want to kind of zoom through just a little bit of some of this so we can get to the most important evidence that I've uncovered recently. But you have to think about the fact That it was the meeting with JFK and Carrie, your namesake, that stirred all of this in Dorothy Kilgallen's most credible investigation of the JFK assassination in history, and led, unfortunately, to her untimely death, basically her murder in 1965. So what does she do? Well, she climbs aboard a plane and goes to Dallas. She interviews Jess Curry, who's the Dallas police chief. He tells her the shots came from the overpass, not from the book depository. She starts looking into everything. I have photographs of her in Dealey Plaza. She starts doing her investigation, and she ends up, of course, going to the Ruby trial, being in the front row at the Ruby trial. And when she's there, she kind of watches Jack Ruby, and he kind of watches her. And all at once, the co-counsel for Ruby, Joe Tannehill, calls her over and says, listen, Jack Ruby wants to talk to you. He is really an admirer of yours. At the Carousel Club, they watch What's My Line. He has read your columns. He's always been a big fan, and he wants to talk to you. So this is going to be the moment when everything changes in Dorothy Kilgallen's life, because out of 400 reporters at that trial, Carrie, she's the only one to interview Jack Ruby, and she does it twice. In the meantime, she's gotten up a friendship with Ruby's attorney, Melvin Belli, and she's at press conferences. She's on the job, Dorothy is, but what Ruby tells her is so important here. And what happens is that we do not know, and I'll explain to you why we don't know, what exactly Ruby said to her. But in 8 to 10 minutes, we now know he clued her in on exactly what happened with regard to the JFK assassination. So what do we know? Well, we know the first place that she went was New Orleans. And that was the home of a gangster named Carlos Marcello.
Mm-hmm.
And he comes into play here because Dorothy investigated and found out that here's what happened. The 1960 election was going to be lost by JFK. His father, Joe, knew unless they won Illinois and West Virginia. And so what did they do? Well, he called his friend Frank Sinatra, a Kennedy family friend, and got in touch then with some of the mafioso, Carlos Marcello, Sato Trafficante, Sam Giancana of Chicago, because they needed to win Illinois and West Virginia, win the election. And you know, this, it really is a true crime murder mystery. You know about the best-selling book, The Reporter Who Knew Too Much. The latest one is Fighting for Justice that has this material in it, even in more depth. So what does she do? Well, she goes to New Orleans, and she looks into Carlos Marcello because she knows that when the gangsters helped Joe Kennedy win the election, there was a deal he made with the devil that Joe made. You help us win the election, and we'll leave you alone when we're in the White House. Well, what immediately happens, Carrie, is that And I had I'm an eyewitness that was right there when Joe Kennedy ordered JFK to appoint Bobby Kennedy Attorney General. Mm-hmm. And what's the first thing that Bobby Kennedy did? Well, he went after the mobsters, yeah, including Carlos Marcello, who he deported to Central America, basically double crossing the mafia, but especially Carlos Marcello. So from then, what she does is she goes to New Orleans. She looks into Marcello, who has $1 billion business, basically racketeering, women, prostitutes. He has his games. He has all of those things there that he's doing, and he's got a lot at risk here. So what he's saying to myself, Bobby Kennedy is going to continue to haunt me, so I've got to make that stop. And what Dorothy learned was that Marcello was a smart guy. He said, well, I can't kill Bobby Kennedy because JFK would come after me with everything the government has. But if I eliminate JFK, Bobby Kennedy will be powerless. And that is exactly what happened. So right away, Dorothy Kilgallen knows that the strongest motive for eliminating JFK is Marcello. So in Dallas, what she does is she looks into all of that, and then she goes to New Orleans. She connects Marcello, Oswald, and Ruby, and she decides that this is the information she knows. But what she learns that I found out about the end of last year, I had gone that far, and I felt like that I had proven that Dorothy was murdered and so on and so forth. But then I got an email. And I'm going to give my email address right now, mshawin@yahoo, because I answer every single email that comes in. We've gotten about 5,000 of them in the last 4 or 5 weeks or 4 or 5 years. And I should tell you, too, that what happens along with that is that there are now 11 million YouTube views of my presentations and interviews about my 5 books having to do with Dorothy Kilgallen and the JFK assassination. And people get in touch with me, like those may who are watching this program, and give me tips and things like that. So I get this email from a gentleman named Morris Wolf in, I think, about September of last year. Mr. Shaw, I just watched a presentation of yours at the Allen Library outside of Dallas, and I noticed the familiar name, Dorothy Kilgallen. He said, I knew her. Well, of course, as you would do, Carrie, your ears perk up, because not that many people are still alive that knew Dorothy Kilgallen. So I call him, and we have a long conversation. And unfortunately, I couldn't record it because he was spewing out all of this information that I found absolutely fascinating. And what he said was, first, yes, I knew her, but let me give you a little background. I graduated from Yale Law School, and I went to work for Bobby Kennedy in the Attorney General's office. In fact, they trusted me so much, he and his brother, that they had me take messages back and forth from the Attorney General's office to the White House. I rode on my bicycle 8 blocks to do that. And the reason was because they believed and knew that J. Edgar Hoover was tapping their phones. Now, think about that. That's at the top echelon of government, and they have to worry about Hoover. He said, I worked for Bobby Kennedy for several years. He described him in his office. His shirt sleeves were rolled up. His tie was undone. He looked like he had just come back from oversleeping. I mean, he was a real genuine human being in that regard. He didn't dress up much. He didn't like it. Mm-hmm. So he gives me all this information, and he says that here's what happened. He said, I worked for Bobby Kennedy. I wrote Title II of the Civil Rights Act while I was there, and it was a wonderful time of my life. But once that was over, he said to me, well, what are you going to do now? I said, I don't know. And he said, well, there's a man I want you to meet. His name is Senator John Sherman Cooper from Kentucky, and he's a Republican, but he and JFK, my brother, are really close friends. John Sherman Cooper and his wife have been to dinners at the White House, and I have photographs in Fighting for Justice, the latest book, of that happening, all of that. He said, I want you to meet him because he's become a member of the Warren Commission. Mm-hmm. So Morris says, listen, I decided to do that. And what I have to tell you, Mark, is that I believe you're going to be able to expose for the first time the inner workings of the Warren Commission and all of the corruption that took place there. Senator Cooper and I got to be really good friends. And finally, he would take me with him in his Saab to the Warren Commission hearings. And I noticed right away that there weren't very many commission members there. It was the staff who was interviewing the witnesses and so on and so forth. And that bothered me. And he said, you know, I couldn't figure out what was going on. I tried to figure out who he had on the commission. And so to do that, what we need is to go back in time just a little bit. When JFK, Kerry, is killed in 1963, J. Edgar Hoover is in a difficult situation. He's afraid that he and the FBI will be held responsible for JFK's death, that they should have stopped it. And so what does he do? He goes into protective mode. The first thing he does is yell, "Oswald alone, Oswald alone, Oswald alone," to the world. So that's getting him on the track that it's a nut that did this, and there's no way the FBI could have done anything. There's no plot to kill the president, nothing like that. The second thing he does, he confiscates all of the Dallas Police Department records. He then steals, basically, JFK's body and sends it off to Washington, D.C. for an autopsy, saying that there's no state crime for killing a president, which was absolutely false. And the autopsy then will be conducted in Washington, D.C. instead of Dallas. All right, so he's buttoned up those three loopholes. So what does he do now? He and LBJ figure out that there's going to be an investigation. Congress is looking into it. The state attorney general in Texas is looking into it. They can't let that happen. There's too many skeletons in the closet, for instance, with Hoover and LBJ.
Oh, yeah.
Especially LBJ with the oil industry and Billy Sol Estes and all that.
Estes, yeah.
So what are we got to do? We're going to appoint a commission. And to give it authenticity, we're going to get Earl Warren, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, to head the commission. It'll be known as the Warren Commission. We're then going to go ahead and pick members on the commission that we can control, that we will go ahead and be able to get them to agree to an Oswald alone conclusion, because that's all we're going to investigate is Oswald alone, nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
And so I looked into who the commission members were. And what I found out is that they decided to look at commission members they could control who would go along with the Oswald alone conclusion. Now, this is the cover of Fighting for Justice. And you will see on here, I hope, and your viewers can, this is the commission members. From left to right over here, the important ones are Senator Richard Russell, who we'll talk about. We've got then Jerry Ford. And I found audio tapes of conversations between LBJ and J. Edgar Hoover talking about the commission members. And one of the interesting comments that LBJ said was, well, we need to get Jerry Ford on there. He can't walk and chew gum at the same time.
Yeah, I heard that story.
Quite an interesting thing. All right. Then you've got Earl Warren. There's LBJ. And then we're going to talk about two members over here. Well, Richard Russell here, and that's Senator John Sherman Cooper right there. Okay? But let's come back. So Hoover gets this group of individuals, and Alan Dulles, by the way. And that really is the first one that I think Dorothy just couldn't understand, and I didn't either during my research, because Alan Dulles was the former CIA director JFK had fired 2 years earlier. I mean, what in the world is he doing on there? But the reason he was on there is because LBJ and Hoover could control him. So they go ahead and they have the hearings. And John Sherman Cooper invites Morris Wolf to the hearings, and he sits in the back row. And all at once he says, well, before I go any further, I need to tell you what John Sherman Cooper said about the proceedings at the Warren Commission. I'm just going to read some of them, and they're very disturbing. They, the commission members, already know about the Jack Ruby connection to organized crime, but they don't want to touch it. It's more than Oswald, but Hoover and Chief Justice Earl Warren keep pushing the Oswald alone conclusion. Our new president wants to cover up the truth and move on. And then there was this one, which was, there are several of those, but basically he said the inability to gather all evidence in certain areas, as well as a number of suspicious circumstances deduced from the record of the witnesses, as maybe preclude the conclusive determination that Oswald and Oswald acted alone. So as you can see, Cooper does not believe that Oswald did not They didn't have assistance when he shot JFK. And Dorothy had found out, you know, that there were questions about all that in Dallas when she was there. So what happens next? Well, I try to do more research because I had missed all this, Carrie, and I feel badly that I did. Mm-hmm. I should have done more research about the Warren Commission. So I decided to look into Senator John Sherman Cooper's oral histories at the University of Kentucky. And I found a file there that basically duplicated what I just read about his suspicions about Oswald alone, and also that he had written a letter he had decided to resign from the Warren Commission at one particular point because he wasn't even being invited to some of the Warren Commission hearings, like when Oswald's brother was testifying or whatever. And he was so upset. He finally decided he was talked out of it by LBJ, but he was really upset. And I found out that his brethren in all of these suspicions about Oswald alone was Senator Richard Russell of Georgia, a Democrat. Hmm. And he and Cooper were good friends, and Cooper listened to Richard Russell about a lot of things having to do with government. So then I found the gold. I found a September 18th, 1964 document in Richard Russell's oral history at the University of Virginia, University of Georgia. And here's what it says. Richard Russell forced a final executive session of the Warren Commission. That would mean all the members. His main agenda was to present his prepared dissent and refuse to sign the commission report unless his dissent was included. After presenting his concern, he was joined in the dissent by Senator John Sherman Cooper and, to a lesser extent, Representative Hale Boggs. In an oral history conducted late in his life, Senator Cooper recalled that Russell's well-reasoned opinions had great influence on Cooper's own admissions. Like Russell, Cooper was impressed with the strong and compelling testimony of Governor Connally and thus was willing to follow Russell's lead in rejecting the single bullet theory and the Oswald alone conclusion. So as you can see, during that meeting, they had decided to demand a dissent be in the final report of the Warren Commission. Well, right after that, Senator John Sherman Cooper found out that that was not in there. Now, this is 6 days before the final report. Mm-hmm. And Morris Wolf said, if you want to see how disgusted Senator Cooper is, just look at that photo of him right there. Look at his face. And he's almost hiding behind Hale Boggs. He is so upset with what the commission is doing. So what happened then? I thought that was disturbing enough that they had that meeting because a dissent was never in the final report as promised. But even worse than that, to show you the lengths that Hoover and LBJ and I think Dulles went to cover up any possibility of the truth, the dissent document was destroyed and never seen again. Richard Russell found that out. They also were supposed to record that particular hearing with the executive committee by a stenographer. And only later did Russell find out that the woman in the room who was typing away was not recording that session. So What Hoover, LBJ, Alan Dulles, maybe Earl Warren decide, we don't want any record of this whatsoever. That's probably, at least in my opinion, that's government corruption at its worst. And right. Dorothy Kilgallen found out about this because, just let me finish this, and then I want to hear what you have to say. This is most important. Morris Wolf said, you know, I knew Dorothy Kilgallen. I used to go to parties at Senator John Sherman Cooper's home at 29th and N Street in Georgetown. And by the way, you would know, I looked that address up, and I found out that's where Cooper lived. And I sat right next to Dorothy Kilgallen at the dinner table. He described her as a bright light bulb, that she was even interrogating me about matters of government and Cooper and all that while she was having her Caesar salad. I mean, she was on the ball, and she was really doing what she could do. The other thing that Cooper did was to trust her with the Warren Commission Jack Ruby testimony, which she printed on the front page of the New York Journal America. J. Edgar Hoover was so upset that he sent two agents to interrogate her. And I think this is the most impressive comment that she ever made showing her integrity, because after they said, what's your sources? Where'd you find them? What city did you find? She said, I would rather die than reveal my sources. And what did Hoover then do? He's only got one loose end now. Ruby's killed Oswald. Ruby is looked upon as crazy at his trial. Mm-hmm. He's used the Warren Commission to cover up any possibility of dissent. There's only one loose end, and that loose end is Dorothy Kilgallen. And when she goes back to New York, she's a blabbermouth. As I think I told you before, Carrie, mm-hmm. She tells everybody she's going to solve the assassination, but she's scared. She's getting a life and she's afraid of her life and her family, and she's getting a gun. If the wrong people knew what I know about the assassination would cost me my death. We don't have to go into the whole scenario, but on November 8th, 1965, she's found in a bedroom she never slept in, eyelashes, false hairpiece, her makeup on, wearing clothes she never wore to bed, a book upside down on her lap. And we know from the research that I've done that she ended up having three lethal barbiturates in her system. I always say to people, if you want to know why Dorothy Kilgallen had it right, the whole Marcello, Oswald, Ruby connection and everything else, it's right because she was writing a book for Random House and J. Edgar Hoover could not let her do that. And so they had to silence her.
Yeah. And the magic bullet. Also, recently we get it discredited by a Secret Service agent who said he found the pristine bullet and put it next to Kennedy, I guess, or was it Connolly? I don't remember, for safekeeping. So 60 years later, that theory gets disproven, and that's the whole crux of the entire explanation of the assassination, proof that Oswald was the lone gunman, been discredited. So ergo, their whole story has crumbled, but it's so many years later. It's 60 years later, Mark, and, almost to the day, you know, both you and I both remember what we were doing that day.
Sure.
And there still are people who care, but it's ancient history to the bulk of humanity.
I don't know if that's true. I go to the fact that I'm not trying to brag, but 11 million views of my presentations and interviews, 5,000 emails and everything. But I just want to emphasize one more time, and I want you to explain the Kerry connection here is fascinating. It would all have never happened if he hadn't taken, I don't believe she would have, maybe she would have looked into the assassination, but not with 18-month investigation. It was because of how JFK treated Kerry. Let people know, how did you get that name?
My mother was a huge Dorothy Kilgallen fan. She would recount years later when Dorothy announced she was getting divorced, she was devastated. Dorothy's son was Kerry, and that's how I got the name, because there weren't many Jewish Kerrys around back then. Primarily an Irish female name.
I didn't know that. I'll be.
Yeah. Well, yep. So
that's what it had been.
I knew Dorothy.
That's your connection.
Thank you, Dorothy. but I do feel like a connection to him because, you know, based on everything you've told me about him and her, you know, it's like, I just wonder, you know, you wind up, how do you get a name? And then what does that name mean? And then, you know, when we first talked, I was about 60 and it's like all these light bulbs go off. Like I have a connection here, not a direct connection, but a connection of somebody who was a fan of Dorothy's and actually named her child based on Dorothy's choice of the.
Oh, absolutely. And I think you've seen the photographs of her in the living room of her home that are in the books with Kerry playing with him. I mean, she loved him so much. She didn't have a great affinity for the other two. Richard, her husband was an alcoholic, and then the son was a big problem. She had to send him to military school. Jill, always was a pill. But Kerry, she just loved Kerry so much. Well, I don't know if I told you this before. I don't want to forget. I know we're just out of time. But at one point, right before she died, they warned her. And it scared the living you-know-what out of her because on the front page of the New York Times, she saw a photograph of Kerry running across Central Park by himself. And she took that to mean that somebody, that she knew people were following her, but now they were following Carrie. And it really scared her. And the people close to her said, Dorothy, you've got to give this up. You've got children. You've got to. And she just couldn't do it. And unfortunately, it cost her life. Did I told you that before?
Yeah, I remember that, something to that effect. So
yeah.
Hey, Mark, just tell us your website, how we connect with you on the web, and find out more and buy your book.
Thank you. That's very nice of you. I appreciate it. It's markshawbooks.com. And the email is mshawin@yahoo.com. I answer every email. And if people want to look at some of these presentations up on YouTube, just go in there and throw in my name and Dorothy Kilgallen. We're magic together. It's right up there.
And Mark, I got to say, like, long before I ever met you, I'd been hearing about you. Of course, you were a conspiracy theorist, a kook, who just couldn't leave the facts alone and always looking for something nefarious. But you basically spent your life on this.
Yeah, 15 years. 15 years.
Yeah, a long time. And, you know, like, I've followed this probably more than a rich person. I've read, watched thousands of videos. So, and being a lawyer, a recovering attorney, I call myself America's top recovering attorney.
Me too.
I know BS when I hear it. And things, you know, there's no such thing as coincidences. If things are too pat, if it's too good to be true, it's too good to be true. The Warren Commission was just a bunch of like fairy tales wrapped with a bow to mollify the American public. The American public never bought it. My parents. Okay. They were hardcore Democrats in the 60s. And I remember my father saying LBJ did it. And because why else did he seal everything up? They sealed up all the records. We still don't have those records. Even Trump wouldn't let it go. What did Trump say when someone asked him why? He said, you know, basically, it's so horrible, I can't let it out.
Well, it keeps going on. I think I've proven as well as I can through my research, there was a plot to kill JFK. The Warren Commission corruption is there. But one of these days, I'm going to try to get the New York District Attorney's Office to reopen Dorothy's case, or basically provide an investigation, since there wasn't one when she died, and see if I can't get her reputation restored, because she didn't overdose on drugs at all. She
you know what? There is a provision in the New York Charter, the New York City Charter, that if you get like three people together, they can petition the court to empower an investigation for virtually anything, Mark. I'm going to look that up. I think
would
it's
you please?
The New York City Charter.
Okay.
And so you start an action, and they have to appoint a special counsel to investigate.
Oh,
and
I didn't really know that.
And I believe it's in the new city charter that was passed during Rudy Giuliani. It had never been used. I heard about this from the former New York City Corporation Counsel, W. Bernard Richland, who was a legendary legal mind, one of the most brilliant legal minds I ever met. And this could just be the perfect application for that clause of the charter. So we'll research and
please sign that for me if you would. Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, and if anyone's got a question for Mark, myself, KL@KerryLutz.com, shoot us an email. Mark will answer it, I promise. And while you're on the site, sign up for a free newsletter. Mark, can't thank you enough for coming on again. It's always amazing talking to you.
You're a good man, Kerry. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to Kerry Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to FinancialSurvivalNetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.